Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Bajaj Housing Finance Limited Q4 FY25 earnings conference call. This call will be recorded, and the recording will be made public by the company pursuant to its regulatory obligations. Certain personal information, such as your name and organization, may be asked during the call. If you do not wish to disclose, please immediately discontinue this call. Ladies and gentlemen, please note, this call is not for media representatives or Bank of America investment bankers or commercial bankers, including corporate and commercial FX. All such individuals are instructed to disconnect now. A replay will be available for Bank of America investment bankers and commercial bankers, including corporate and commercial FX. The replay is not available to the media. As a reminder, all participant lines will remain in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal the operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone telephone. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anuj Singla. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you, Ryan. Good evening, everyone. This is Anuj Singla from Bank of America Securities. Thank you very much for joining us for the Bajaj Housing Finance earnings call to discuss quarter four and full year FY25 earnings. To discuss the earnings, I'm pleased to welcome Mr. Atul Jain, Managing Director, Mr. Gaurav Kalani, CFO, and they are joined by other senior members of the management team. Thank you very much, Atul sir, for giving us the opportunity to host you. I now invite Mr. Atul Jain for his opening remarks, post which we will open the floor for Q&A. With that, over to you, sir.
Thank you, Anuj and BofA team, for hosting us. A very good evening to those who are in India joining this call, and good morning, depending upon the geography, if someone is joining from the Western Hemisphere. I have with me Gaurav, our CFO, and Jasminder, our President Home Loans, Vipin, EVP CRE, Neeraj, Risk Officer, Dushyant, our Developer Construction Finance Head, and Pawan, heading our Near Prime and Affordable SBU. I'll take 15-20 minutes to cover the important sections of the investor deck, which is now uploaded on the website as well as on the stock exchange, and later on, leave the balance time for utilizing for question-answer session. Quickly going to panel number three on the presentation. Overall, good quarter across metrics: AUM, asset quality, and profit. As of 31st March 2025, AUM has stood at 114,684 crores, growing 26%, while we have maintained asset quality with GNPA of 0.29% and NNPA at 0.11%, respectively. Q4 FY25 PAT has grown by 54%, and annualized ROA was steady at 2.4%. OPEX trajectory continued to improve from 27.1% OPEX to net NTI in Q4 FY24 to 21.7% in Q4 FY25. This is for Q4. Overall yearly numbers also we will talk about as we go forward. We are currently present across 174 locations through a network of 216 branches. Annualized ROE for the quarter was 12.1%, while annualized credit cost was 0.12%. Capital adequacy has remained very strong, supported by capital raise during the year, and CAR was tad below 28.25%. PBC ratio, which is a critical metric from an HFC point of view, which is a 60% and a 50% requirement from the regulatory point of view, we were 63.28%, which was well above the regulatory requirement of 60% as of 31st March 2025. I'll move to panel number four. I've spoken about the overall AUM growth on the previous panel. In terms of a product level, that growth was decent across products. Home loans grew by 22%, LAP by 28%, LRD by 24%, and developer finance by 49%. The company total added 6,370 crores of AUM during the quarter, as against 5,442 crores in Q4 FY24. Overall portfolio mix also remained well diversified, with some movement between the products. HL stands at 56.2%, LAP at 10.7%, LRD at 19.1%, and developer finance at 12.5%. Company disbursed 14,254 crores during the quarter, as against 11,393 crores in Q4 FY24. So hence, overall disbursements grew by 25% on YOY basis for the quarter. As we had updated in the last quarter regarding launch of our SBU of Near Prime and Affordable Housing, the business is growing steadily and is in line with our expectations to meet the future goals of the business. During the quarter, the company has also strengthened its management team to support future growth. We will continue to invest in the coming year in SBU, which is for Near Prime and Affordable Housing, and also non-top six markets, to generate future growth for the company. I'm jumping to the next panel. Cost of funds remained flat sequentially at 7.9% for Q4 FY24. Our well-diversified borrowing mix has further improved with mix of money market instruments at 49%, followed by bank borrowing at 41% and NHB refinance at 10%. OPEX to NTI, as called out earlier, improved from 27.1% in Q4 FY24 to 21.7% in Q4 FY25. And on a full year, dropped from 24% in FY24 to 20.8% in FY25. Company also continues to leverage technology for digitalizing various processes, which is now reflecting from our increasing penetration of new initiatives like e-agreement. We are crossed on 93% penetration of our entire customer base whom we are onboarding new. And online customer onboarding journey is also crossing 80% penetration in month of March. Gross spread was marginally lower at 1.8% from 1.9% in Q3 FY25, going to reduction in yield because of the market competitive pressure, while the net interest margins was flat on sequential basis at 4%. Coming to panel number 6, overall asset quality has remained healthy during the quarter. GNPA was in line with previous quarter at 0.29%. NNPA improved on sequential basis from 0.13% to 0.11%. Credit cost has stood at 0.12% in Q4 FY25. This improved from 0.18% in Q4 FY24. Quarterly profit has grown by 54% from 381 crores to 587 crores. The company has reevaluated its income tax position, while the PBT has grown by 48%, while PAT has grown by 54% because of a one-time tax position reevaluation by the company based on deductibility of a certain expenditure. Accordingly, the company has reversed 24.44 crore tax expense from the previous year and reduced FY25 provision by close to 10 crores. So thus, there has been a total tax reduction of 34 crores in the Q4 FY25. 10 crore out of it is in pertaining to FY25, while 24 crores is pertaining to the previous year's expense. Annualized ROA for the quarter was in line sequentially at 2.4%, and it has improved by 40 bps against an ROA of 2% in Q4 FY24. Annualized ROE for the quarter was 12.1% against a 12.7% in Q4 FY24, owing to the impact of capital raise during the year. Absolute net worth of the company stood at 19,932 crores as of 31st March 25, just a tad below 20,000 crores. I'm moving to panel number 15, which is a medium-term guidance. There is no change in the medium-term guidance on the key financial indicators, what we had added from last quarter's investor presentation. Quickly moving to panel number 17, which is a quarterly financial snapshot as well as a yearly financial snapshot. We have already discussed about quarterly financials. For full year FY25, net total income has grown by 23% and pre-provisioning operating profit grew by 28% year on year. Profit before tax was up 28% and PAT grew by 25%. Full year credit cost has been at 0.09% and ROA stood at 2.4% and ROE at 13.4%. Moving to panel number 19, portfolio yield has come down to 9.7% in Q4 FY25, witnessing a 10 basis reduction sequentially and 20 basis reduction on YOY basis, while COF was flat at 7.9% sequentially and 10 basis higher on YOY basis. Accordingly, gross spread reduced by 10 basis sequentially at 1.8%, owing to portfolio yield reduction and 20 basis on YOY basis. OPEX to NTI already improved at 21.7% in Q4 FY25, while it has inched up on sequential basis due to investment in new business and management team strengthening as called out in earlier panel. In terms of asset quality, GNPA flat on the sequential basis, and I have already covered credit cost, ROA and ROE on the previous panel. I'll move to panel number 20. Just a reiteration of our well-diversified borrowing relationships. We have a borrowing relationship across 17 banks. NCD share has inched up by 2.3% sequentially. Coming to panel number 23, portfolio mix remains within our guided range with slight increment in LAP and developer financing on sequential basis. As of 31st March, HL has stood at 56.2%, LAP at 10.7%, and LRD at 19.1% with construction finance at 12.5%. Moving to panel number 28, Stage 1 assets have improved by 5 bps to 99.39 as of March 25. Stage 2 assets have witnessed reduction of 5 bps, so there is a intra movement from Stage 2 to Stage 1 in that sense, from 0.37 in Q3 FY25 to 0.32 in Q4 FY25. while provisioning coverage has improved from 55.4% in Q3 FY25 to 60.3% in Q4 FY25. I'm jumping to panel number 30, which is the product-wise provisioning coverage. It remains healthy across products. Coming to product-wise GNPA, there's a slight movement of 1 bps in home loan GNPA to 0.34%. LAP has improved by 9 bps to 0.65%. LRD continues to have nil GNPA, and developer finance GNPA has reduced by 4 bps to 0.05%. NNPA has reduced across product because of increase in the provisioning coverage. Home loan NNPA has improved by 3 bps, LAP by 7 bps, and DF has improved by 1 bps, thereby delivering the overall NNPA at 0.11%. Now, that was all what I would have wanted to talk about on the important figures from the deck. Happy to take questions. Me and the management team is here to provide answers to the questions from the team.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and one on your touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use their handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question comes from the line of Piran Engineer from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi team. Congratulations on your results. Just a couple of questions. Firstly, have we cut our home loan rates after the 50 bps repo rate cut? And is it only on incremental or also on the back book?
Okay. Thanks. So we have, yes, we on the acquisition, of course, because we are in a competitive industry, we have to cut as in line with what competition is. To the second question on the portfolio, yes, the benefit has been passed on in the acquisition. While there may be some differential on the what is the repo book, their repo book, asset book, we have to pass on in line with the repo cut. Non-repo book, while there is a differential, but there is a benefit which has been passed on.
No, I mean, could you quantify it? Is it 50 bps only?
So 50 bps is a repo. So the repo book, it's a full 50 bps which is passed on. While on the non-repo book, there is a differential, you can say, in the range of 10 to 15 bps which has been passed on.
Okay. That don't fear will lead to BT out because the banks would have anyway passed on 50 bps.
So the banks would pass on 50 bps over a period of next 3 months. So this 15 bps what we are talking about till now, which is effectively the February cut conversation we are doing. April cut conversation will take the view in the month of beginning May. So even the bank record pass does not happen immediately. It happens over a period of 3 months. So the April cut pass on has not happened in terms of, in our case, the repo book is repriceable as and when. So that's why the repo cut entire 50 bps is passed on. While in case of an internal referrer, there is a decision which ALCO will take in the April end for the May cut. There will be some incremental pass on which will happen on the other. So 15 bps is not a final number. 15 bps is representing of February number.
Yeah. Okay. And even on the incremental loans, it's fair to say that how much you've cut your PLR, that much is the incremental yield cut.
Incremental
for the non-repo linked loans.
No, it can be higher as well or lower as well because there is a spread adjustment also in incremental book which can happen, not on the past book. Past book, there is no spread adjustment. But in incremental book, this is the market pricing. You cut your PLR, but there can be a plus and a minus in the margin side also depending on what is the market pricing at that point of a time.
Understood. This is very clear. And also just a follow-up on this would be what percentage of your home loans are repo linked versus, say, PLR linked? On book?
Our book is close to 13,000 odd crore, which is repo linked. Out of 64,000 odd crore, 13,500 crore is a repo linked book against a 64,000 odd crore of home loan.
Okay, understood. Secondly, just for Gaurav, over the last 1 year, we've increased our NCD share from 35% to 45%. Just wanted to get the logic behind, you know, raising fixed rate instruments when we know rates are going to decline.
So this is taken a decision, the fundraising decision is taken at the point of a time, which is a multiple factor of, let us say, what is the variable money you are able to raise at that point of a time versus a fixed money. taking a call on saying that what is the maximum downward trajectory on the variable money you will encounter versus what is the upfront benefit you are getting. So it's a calibrated call always at that point of a time. What is beneficial for the company, we take a interest rate view. So that when you raise a fixed money, you take the interest rate view versus the variable money available at that point of a time. Because we as a finance company have to keep on borrowing at all points of a time. So what is the variable money cost versus a fixed cost? And in terms of an NCD as well, we have raised last year as a variable interest rate NCDs, which was one issue was on a NCD which was on a variable interest rate. So there is a variability there. On the fixed NCDs also, to some extent, we cover through our OIS hedging as well. So there is a various strategies which are available to manage your cost of fund flow through the cycle. Because we are cognizant of our book and we are cognizant of that we, in the interest rate downward cycle, there is a pass-through which happens.
Understood. So just at today's time, point of time, a fixed rate instrument versus a variable rate borrowing, which would be a bank borrowing, what would be the difference in cost?
It will, we have, after the second rate cut, we have not borrowed in the variable rate from the bank. So, but I'll say still the differential at the, because there will be a tenor differential, let us say a 3-year bond versus a bank line, today differential would be close to 50 to 60 basis.
Okay, 50. Okay, got it. I'll get back in the queue for more questions, but thank you so much and all the best.
Thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Shubhranshu Mishra from Philip Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, Atul. Hi, God. Question, the first part is, what is the number of collection on-roll employees in how many collection?
I'm not able to hear you clearly. Can you come closer to the mic and speak, because we are not able to hear you clearly.
Right. Is this better?
Slightly better. Yeah, please go ahead. We'll try to make out of the question.
How many collection on-roll employees and how many collection agents do we deploy? And if we can split that asset class, right? Second is that what percentage of our construction finance book would be still on Morat? And if we can get the split of what comes out in this year and what comes out in the next 1 or 2 years?
So if I've understood your questions right, the first question is how many are the regular employees of the company versus the off-road contract employees. So the absolute number is 1,977 are company on-roll employees and total manpower is 4,811 as of 31st March 25. So you can say the balance 2,900 are off-roll or contractual employees. 1,977 are on-roll employees. That's first part. Second part, you are saying on the construction finance Morat book. Is my understanding right? That's the question you asked. How much book is on Morat?
Correct.
See, I had explained last time also, I think, Shubhanshu, that the Morat, when we give a construction finance, there is not a case where we don't have a sweep from the day one in terms of principal repayment as the sales happen. While on a paper, the Morat period is till the point of a time the project gets completed, which is close to 36 months kind of a normal scenario, which is a Morat. So largely in that sense, if you look at from the contractual term, it is larger part of the book will be Morat. However, the sweep on the sales collection starts from the day one. If I look at the past experience of last 4 years, there is no case which eventually comes out of the Morat, because before the 3 year, because of the sales and the cash flows coming stronger, the entire loan gets repaid before the Morat period is over. So we don't give any holiday on any collection as it starts. So our construct is clear. We disburse on tranches basis the movement of the stage in construction. We have a sales milestone and a collection milestone linked to each stage of a construction at each tranche. And each amount of rupee collected from day one, there is a sweep structure which comes as a principal payment, and interest has to be serviced by the developer on a monthly basis on the separate side. So Morat is a technical question, because you are that I am assuming you are coming from the banking side, because in the banks they follow a different structure, public sector banks, where they give a complete Morat upfront and then they collect the money later on. In our case, the repayment starts from day one. Have I been clear?
Sure. The first question was around the collection employees. What are the total number of collection employees again? Because we give the off-roll employees.
So in our case, we don't have much of an off-roll employee because we are not a very heavy collection, heavy infrastructure company. Number of 250 odd would be the number of collection employees.
Right, sure. Thanks, I'll come back in the future.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Sashi Kumar from Trade Brains. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. I have observed a strong absolute growth in both PAT and total income over the past few years. However, the year-on-year growth rates appear to be moderating recently. For instance, PAT growth declined from 77% in FY23 to 25% in FY24, while total income growth also slowed from 50% in FY23 to 26% in FY25. Could you please share your perspective on factor driving this moderation in growth rates? Additionally, do you see this as a natural normalization following a high growth phase, or there are specific challenges or strategic shift impacting the pace of growing?
Shashi, I think we are, I can request Wafa team to see the connectivity because we have guessed your questions, Shashi. You can correct and Gaurav will try to answer the question. If the answer is right, you are talking about growth moderating in the PAT from FY23 to now as a percentage. Is that I heard you right? Or
yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Gaurav, can you check on FY23 growth percent? Because FY23, because we are so far looking at FY24 versus 25, just give us a minute to look at the number, to refer the what number you are referring to.
PAT growth is, current year is 25, last year was 38%. You're looking at NII or NTI growth, right? Which was 19% last year and 23% this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so reason for movement from 19 to 38 last year versus 23 to 25 this year?
Shishi, if I can request you to be, can explain your question.
Maybe I can take it offline as well.
Because we are not able to understand the question.
So once again, I'll say it once. Sir, the PAT and total income over past 3 years, like last three, FY23 to FY25, PAT tax declines from 77% to 25% in FY25, while total income also declined from 50% to 26%. So what are the...
Sorry, I understood Shashi now. Shashi, for FY22, we are a three-year-old company. The base is very small. So as a company will grow forward, because if I look from FY18 to... total cumulatively, we look like the growth of a 90% or a 80%, because company started in 17-18. So the initial period on a very small base, as the book grows, the income levels will grow in a very different level. There is no decline other than a normal sizing conversation, because once you grow at a certain size, then the growth happens at a particular percentage, while the growth at a much smaller scale will be at a very different level. In terms of income growth, I'd say, because there when you are adding the book, you are almost the book increases the book by more than I think in FY22 or 23, probably your book grew by 40-45%, correct? If I FY22 to 21 in FY22 versus 21, probably book growth was much higher.
40%, yeah, from 8% to 20.
Actually, you have to take a base impact in 18 to 19, the book would have grown more than 100%. The income would have been much more than that. It's a question of a relative sizing and the base climbing, Shashi. There is no other impact.
And my follow-up question is now, like, sir, the recent in Maharashtra, there was a recent hike in ready record in the rates on demand patterns of average ticket size in the region. Has this influenced our growth, like in this disbursement guidance for FY26?
So there is no impact of ready reckoner rates on the home loan growth, because ready reckoner rates are in terms of increased by the government. After 3 years, government has increased the ready reckoner rate by 6-7%. In my individual assessment, I don't think it is going to result into any impact in demand for homes or versus home loan demand. Because if you have to buy a house, you are buying a house, it is not dependent upon the ready reckoning rate, and ready reckoning rate in any case is a reflection of what is the pricing in the market which you are currently buying. So in our, for the best of my understanding or assessment, there is no impact flowing in the home loan growth from decision to increase ready reckoning rate.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Viral Shah from IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi Atul and Gaurav. Thanks for the opportunity. I have a few questions. So just one is first clarification. Atul, you mentioned on that hedge book to kind of manage this fixed rate borrowings that you have done. So can you quantify the extent of this hedging? Is it material at all, which can help us convert this fixed kind of liabilities into a floating nature effectively?
It is to some extent material. It is close to 2300 crore, if I have to give the absolute number.
Okay, so the way to look at it is 2300 crores of your bonds would behave like a floating rate bond.
Yeah, the market, so 28, yes, that is the way, same way to look at it, 2300 crore, because there is a hedging literally is taken in a various forms. So like if you have a 10-year NCD, you don't take a hedging against a 10-year, because that is supposed to play over the interest rate cycle. It is largely a 5-year bond what you hedge, because that is where you can be on the one end of the interest rate cycle. You can enter at the same interest cycle and exit at the same. A 2-year or a 3-year, again, you are able to take a very calibrated call at the time of a raising, saying that whether how it will play out during the tenor as you raise the money. So you can take the calibrated call at that point of time, what is the differential between a floating rate money versus a fixed rate money, what you are getting into, and take an interest rate view ahead of a 2-year or a 3-year. 10-year, in any case, there is no hedging instrument available, and don't take the view at a 10-year. So there's a 5-year which falls in between where the hedging takes place. So from that point of view, that is covered. The otherwise, 2-year or 3-year, when you raise the money at that point of time, only you take the call, calibrated call on the basis of saying that whether you are taking a fixed call versus a floating money, what is available.
Got it. So basically on this 2300 crore effectively, have we seen already the 50 bps kind of a decline?
More than that.
Adjusted. Okay. So we have already seen that on the borrowing front.
Because OISs have, they run ahead in the market basis the future rate cut expectations as well.
Got it. Makes sense. Yeah. The other question is on basically the credit cost, right? So now we are still at 12 bps kind of a credit cost, and with no more buffer provisions there, and also some bit of, I would say, changing book mix, like say within LAP, the share of self-employed is increasing. When do we see kind of a normalization on the credit cost front?
There is another complexity to the credit cost, which is a factor of assignment, what assignment we do, because when we do an assignment, there is a stage 1 provisioning goes down. So that's why when we guide for the credit cost, we say on a steady state basis, 20 to 25 basis of the credit cost is what we envisage. So if you have to say that we are not, if we don't do any assignment and the book mix remains same, in terms of a medium term, that is a 20 to 25 basis of a credit cost is the guidance what we give. Which is put as a part of our medium-term guidance. That's because if we continue to, let us say, assign more, the credit costs looks lower because of a lower stage 1 provisioning. But 20-25 basis points from a business modeling perspective is a credit cost. Not more than that. Not less than that can be a factor of a time or the decision to do assignment less or more.
Got it. So basically, effectively, this 20-25 is on assets, not on AUM.
Yeah.
Got it. And Atul, if you can say quantify the...
I'll just correct your understanding. I think 12 bps is also on assets, not on AUM, which is the current cost, because there is no credit cost on the AUM minus AR, what is now my off-book. But I'm saying that because the year, if you do a more assignment, the credit cost for the year looks lower because you release the general provisioning on the assets what you have assigned out. So there are multiple mixes of a GP provisioning. That's where I'll be saying that if, assuming we don't do any assignment out in a year and the kind of a business we are pursuing, 20-25 bps is the credit cost what we bake in our business mathematics or a business calculation, and which is what we guide for. It is always on AR on book. It's not never on a AM. So the 0.12 is also on AR only. I just wanted to clarify.
Got it, Atul. Next is if you can quantify the impact from, say, the removal of the exit penalties on the floating rate loans, which is, say, LAP. Of course, the home loans, you don't have the exit penalties. But on the LAP front, the proposed circular from RBI, what could be the impact of that, if at all that gets into implementation?
It won't be very material for us at an absolute level because home loans, as you've already called out, are already exempt from FC charges. Commercial businesses also, as per the draft circular, are exempt. So the only business impacted would be loot against property. If I look at the last year, entire foreclosure charges collection in that business was less than 12 to 13 odd crores. So if we have to take a zeroization, that is the kind of a number we are talking about. It's not material number for us.
And the second order impact, do you see BT outs increasing over there and maybe you will have to work more on the pricing front over there also?
That will let it play out how it plays out, Vidal, because it's a guesswork. Yes, exit rate, exit barrier going down or not being there, it can result into a higher BT out. But in that sense, if you look at a home loan, even today also the exit rates of LAP prepayment or a BT out rates of LAP are not very different from HL. In fact, they are on a higher rate. So there is all the LAP is slightly higher even with the exit clause or exit penalty as well. Home loan, there is no exit clause or a penalty. It depends on various factors. So I'll not say it is assumed to be much higher, but of course we have to generally talk intuitively. Yes, we can say there can be a more BT out when there is no exit clause.
Got it. And Atul, if I may, one more question, more from a quarter perspective. So there has been a sharp increase in the OPEX on a quarter-on-quarter basis, and also, secondly, the PBC number on a sequential basis seems to have increased by around 100 odd basis points, despite, say, home loan growing slower. So what can be the explanation for both of these things?
First part, we had already called out that we have invested deep and we are going to invest deeper as far as both in the management team and the new businesses, both SBU which we have set up and the top 6 plus markets we are investing. So that sequentially it has moved up by close to 1%. It has not moved up dramatically in that sense. I corrected, 20.9% has moved to 21.7 or 21.8. And generally, March is always heavier if you look at the last also quarter. I think there's a disturbance.
Are we audible, Anuj? Yes, sir, you are audible.
Yeah. Okay, sorry, Vidal, just to continue the conversation, sorry we got dropped out. So we were talking about impact of the OPEX to NTI growing. One, it has grown by close to 1% in the current quarter versus the previous quarter. I'll say a marginal increase, but if we see the previous years also, quarter four is always the heaviest because generally you tend to place all your orders and investments in the quarter four. That's a YOY comparison and a trend. Second, we are called out clearly saying that we are investing deep in our SBU as well as our non-profit structure. So that is where it has inched up to that extent on OPEX to NTI for the current quarter. Your question was on why it has inched up, or if I have missed.
And PBC.
Okay. PBC has moved up, Vidal, on account of two factors. While home loan growth has been lower than the overall growth, the assignment out during the quarter was largely non-home loan assets. So the PBC is calculated on the assets with us. If there was a large assignment out of non-home loan assets, so that's where PBC, you see an improvement by 1% on a quarter-on-quarter. Second, also on reduction of cash holdings. Because in for PBC computation, even cash holdings are taken as a denominator. You see on a quarter-on-quarter, as the exit quarter, if there is a drop in the cash holding, that is also resulting into improvement in the PBC criteria.
Got it, Atul. Very helpful. Do I have time for one more question?
Well, I would request you to please join back the queue.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, the management line has dropped once again. Please stay connected while we rejoin. Ladies and gentlemen, we have the management reconnected. We take the next question from the line of Raghav Garg from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, hi. Good evening and thanks for the opportunity. I just have two questions. One, I know there's been a fair bit of discussion on the liability side, but I still have one question. Can you please comment on the trajectory for cost of funds for FY 2026? What is your expectation in terms of how much can it decline because of the repo rate cuts?
Raghav, our estimate is to assuming there are two cuts which has happened and one cut more happens. YoY, I think we should see a drop 34-35 basis points roughly.
You're saying on a 75 basis points rate cut cumulatively, right?
On a 75 basis rate cut cumulatively, we should see 34-35 basis points kind of a pass-through on a full year basis in FY 2026.
Understood. Thanks. The second question is, I wanted to understand how are you looking at your market share in retail home loans at the developer counter? Why I'm asking this question is when I look at the home loan AUM as a multiple of, say, one-year or two-year lag developer loans, right? Then that multiple or that number has been continuously declining for last several quarters. I don't know if it makes sense to you or not. Probably you can guide me better, but if you can just comment, what is your retail home loan market share, you know, maybe based on sourcing at the developer counter.
Raghav, our home loan market share in the market has been improving every quarter for the last two years. If you look at our market disbursements versus what we disburse, we have been inching up in our market share. Now, the methods what you are seeing is, to my mind, I think that's not a. Because we don't acquire only the home loan at our developer counter where we have funded the project. That's a minor part of our acquisition. That's not a minor, but that's a. It is not the only part where we are acquiring the home loan penetration, home loan business. Home loan business is acquired at multiple counter, and the home loan AUM growth is also a factor of acquisition minus the retention and minus what has gone out. In terms of a competitive market, a lot of time in last year, there has been a kind of a significant pressure on the book from a BTO perspective because acquisition prices has run much lower than this pre-cost of fund cut also or a pre-repo cut as well. The metric, the way you are looking at is not the rightful metric in that sense. Our market share has moved up gradually on a quarter-on-quarter basis from last two years, three years on an acquisition basis at a total level.
Understood. What percentage of home loan sourcing that you do comes from the developers that you have funded to?
I'll assume close to 15%-20% kind of a number. I'll come back with you exact number, but my ballpark figure will be 15%-20% kind of a number.
Understood. That's enough. That's all from my side. All my other questions have been answered. Thanks.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Abhijit Tibrewal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good evening, everyone, and thank you for taking my question. Firstly, clarification on the previous question when you said with the assumption of a 75 basis points repo rate cut, you foresee a 34-35 basis points pass-through. Were you talking about the pass-through to the customers if there is a set 75 basis points rate cut?
No, we are talking about pass-through in our cost of funds to the company. The pass-through to the customer would be higher. It would be 45-50 basis points kind of a number which will get passed through. Of course, it will depend upon the competitive intensity in the market, how the yield impact can be 45-50 basis points on a 75 basis points kind of a cut.
Got it. I was just trying to understand, I mean, you shared earlier in this call that almost 20% of your home loan book is linked to repo rates, and the remaining is linked to your internal PLR.
Yeah.
Where you have already affected a 50 basis points rate cut.
Yeah.
Even when in this quarter our cost of borrowing is largely flat QoQ. Just trying to understand, I mean, is this internal PLR book, right, more linked to how market forces are, how the competitive intensity is, instead of how your cost of borrowings are going to evolve?
It is both ways because there is one is the projected cost of funds trajectory as well, Abhijit, because you have to pass on in the market as the rate cut expectations happen to protect rightfully, the BT out kind of a portfolio because there can be a more BT out seekers if you don't pass through in your internal link rate. Internal link rate, sometimes you run ahead of passing by basis your projected reduction in the cost of fund. Like our projected cost of fund reduction probably in this quarter would be close to 20 basis points from what last quarter had been there. So if you have to pass on a bit ahead of 1 or 2 months ahead of the time on the reset to protect the book from there, that's a temporary mismatch which happened.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And the other thing I was trying to understand in this last 3 months or so, I mean, has anything changed in terms of the aggression from bank?
We have not seen, if you're talking about public, I think the aggression is not changed even post March end. From a private sector bank, we saw a fair bit of aggression in month of March. I think April, in our assessment, what we have seen in the market is yet to fully firm up the mind, I think, but there is a bit of a public sector banks continue to be much more aggressive. Private sector banks are not that aggressive in month of April, but March, everyone was as aggressive as what we could have assumed.
Got it. So essentially speaking, I mean, March aside, right, which is where we continue, we have always seen this competition from banks, but beyond that, because of rate cuts, you have not seen any additional aggression from banks, either PSUs or private.
After the first rate cut, I think PSUs are far more aggressive. After the second rate cut, the market is yet to find its feet or get settled in the pricing. Because pricing gets settled after 15-20 days of the rate cut, so it's yet to settle down the market. What I talked about, the early indicators, that early indicators are our feelers in the market. We'll have to finally arrive at the conclusion in month of May. Because February rate cut, we saw the impact in the month of March. April rate cut probably in month of May is where we'll be able to appropriately, rightfully answer saying that what we are seeing in the market.
Got it. That is useful. And the last question that I had was, in terms of assignments, while you explained how credit costs can vary when you do assignments because there's a general provision release, I was just trying to understand how are we thinking about assignments going forward, because as you'll appreciate, there is a component of upfronting of the assignment income that comes through. So how are we thinking about assignments more structurally going forward?
So assignment is an integral part of a mortgage balance sheet because of a ALM match what we get, because we are essentially lending for long term and their borrowings are not for that long term. For a mortgage company, assignment at a particular portion of a 12 to 15% of our book, normally we keep it, and that's a long-term strategy as well. You will continue to see the percentage of assigned at that ratio. It is nothing to do with the upfronting of income. Yes, that's an in-depth accounting which results into. So in this last quarter, in that sense, there is a assignment income of 46 crore which is booked in because of the assignment. But if we exclude assignment income also, then also the income growth would be in line with Q4 FY24 in terms of a non-interest income growth.
Got it. This is useful. Thank you so much, and wish you and your team the very best.
Thanks, Abhijit.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Dhaval from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, Adil. Congrats on the quarter. Just had three questions. First was relating to spread. Till now, whatever we've discussed around pricing and cost of fund, is it safe to assume that next year we could see about 10 basis points of spread compression from where we end Q4? And so any comment around that would be useful. The second question is relating to the target mix, asset mix. And so if my understanding is right, directionally, we expect the developer book share to increase. We expect the deeper market share to increase. And those should be yield benefit outcomes. How much of that can play out next year and sort of help you protect on the mix-related benefit, asset mix-related benefit? Any comments around that would be useful. And the last bit is, the minimum public shareholding, any color around that, how do you intend to sort of get to that 70%? Will there be fresh equity, etc. in FY26, or we intend to use that in FY27? Any comments around that would be useful. Yeah, those are three questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Dhaval. On your first question, if we maintain as it is book mix, yes, you can see a NIM compression of a 10 to 15 bps during the year, because if the Because if we are going, if we are saying 34, 35 bps is what we expect the differential in the cost going down, and I said 45 to 50 bps on the yield impact, which can be there as a, if we take a 75 bps kind of a rate cut scenario. However, as you have only called out, there is a target type mix, which is a play around for us available, whether a developer finance book going up from 12.5% to 15%, what we had called out even last year also, which results into compensating the increase of our non-top six markets, which we have invested deep, or in increase of contribution from the SBU in terms of a near prime and there. We will target to cover a reasonable portion of the hit, what we expect from the NIM. Of course, the pool cannot be covered because there is a larger book sitting there. But to some extent, to the extent of our intent would be to compensate or mitigate a larger part of the hit, what is going to be there from the yield or a NIM compression in terms of a declining rate scenario. However, I would just like to call out, we had always called out earlier as well, even in when we were talking about in the interest rate cut scenario was not there. Mortgage is a cycle business. When the interest rates are up, of course, the returns are margins are expand, margins expand for a point of a time, then the liabilities catch up on the interest going interest rate scenario while the assets run a bit ahead of a liability. On a downward cycle, it will be a reverse way, barring the change of the mix play, what as I called out, we will try to do. But through a cycle, that is where it remains, and that's where we will remain, our ROEs will remain within the guided range of a medium-term ROE range, what we have given. With the plus minus of spread, whether an interest rate rising cycle or whether a decreasing rate cycle. Of course, in that scenarios, we'll try to play it a bit different to over-manage so that there is a less of a disruption. That is where, so 10-15 bps on a steady state, but we are confident that we should be able to mitigate a larger part of it through the asset mix change strategy, what we are trying to execute.
Yes, what it does this?
Second question, yes, you asked on the public shareholding. It's away, it's 2.5 years away, Dhaval, to meet a 25% requirement. Of course, categorically, I can tell you there is no plan to raise new capital in FY26 by BHFL because our leverage is 5.1 or 5.2 as of 31st March 25. As a mortgage company, it does not make sense for us to raise money anywhere less than 7.5 kind of a lever, 7.5 kind of a lever. So there is no conversation or a thought process around any public issue part. For meeting the guidelines, there is a mix of whether it can be a secondary offering from Bajaj Finance, the shareholder, at their appropriate time. The board of Bajaj Finance will have to take the call at appropriate time to say that, how do we meet that. But there is no primary conversation which will happen for next at least 1.5-2 years. There is no primary requirement of a capital.
Understood. I think this is very useful. Thanks and all the best.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and one. The next question comes from the line of Pranuj from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. I hope I'm audible. First question.
You're not clearly audible, Pranuj. I think the speech.
Hello, is now better?
Yeah, now it is perfect. Yes, please. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So my first question is on your incremental loan sourcing that you're doing. On what basis do you decide whether you have to link it to repo or your PLR? Like, is it purely based on competition, some customer cohort, or on an incremental basis, should we see this queue continuing to move towards higher repo linked loans?
So this is dependent upon market scenario and also our ability to sell and the customer cohort. So incrementally, you should see more of a PLR rather than repo, because repo we offer up to, it's an internal setting. We offer repo asset size only to the extent of a repo liabilities we have, to not to carry a interest rate risk in the balance sheet. So if I have to say, if there was a 14,000 crore repo book on the asset size, there's a 16,000 crore book on the liability side for us to not have a mismatch in the interest rate risk side, because we can't carry interest rate risk side. We are only a credit risk company, which we have to take a credit risk because we are in a lending business. Apart from that, we don't want to take an interest rate risk. So the ability to grow repo book is linked to our ability to grow repo linked liabilities. Risk has to be in the internal PLR.
Okay, so the preference would be for PLR, but I'm guessing because of higher competition, it could shift more towards repo also.
It will be determined by availability of our repo liabilities rather than the competition, because we will not want to create an interest rate risk in the balance sheet.
Okay. Understood. And it's fair to assume that this 15K CR repo-linked liabilities will be all bank loans?
Largely.
Okay. And thanks for that. The second question is on your affordable and near-prime SB unit. So will the growth over here be purely organic, or will you also try to BT out customers from some of the affordable housing companies?
We are looking at organic growth here. The BT is in this business, what we have started is an SBU will not be more than 10-12% of the mix. Even now also what we are acquiring, 10-12% of the mix only comes as a balance transfer, where we want to look at an organic number and we want to build a purchase transaction mix, because we are yet to learn the ropes of the trade in this business as we are going forward. And we know from experience that balance transfer is slightly more riskier than the organic purchase, which is a monetization versus a investment or a purchase of an asset. So our focus will largely be on purchase assets here as we grow this business.
Okay, understood. And what would be the yields as compared to your current on-book yields of 9.7% in the affordable and near-prime segment?
The yield, you don't have to compare with the current book, because in a home loan versus a prime home loan to a near prime and affordable book, the difference in yield will be close to 180 bps on acquisition.
Okay, understood. That's very clear. Thank you. That's it from my side.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Nischint Chawathe from Kotak Institutional Equities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. You know, you mentioned about, you know, approximately a 10 basis points kind of an hit this year because of rise in, you know, sorry, because of the fall in interest rates. I mean, I was just curious whether this is only for the home loan book, or is it kind of doing a math for the entire book? And in that sense, what role can really be played by the change in business mix?
So Nishant, this week you are talking about book stock as of today, so which includes the book stock. That is where we said that a part of it or a larger part of it we will try to mitigate through the asset mix change as we acquire during the year. So because if it take a, we are taking a stock on the stock today when we are calling it.
And this is not home loan book, this is the entire book that we are talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about the stock.
Yeah, I understand the stock of not home loans, but entire book.
The full entire company book stock. Company book stock.
Got it. And on the bank borrowing side of 34,000 crores, how much is linked to repo?
This is MCLR is close to 23-24%. Balance is either repo or repo equivalent, which can be a T-bill or a G-sec equivalent, where the pass-through is as close to repo.
Got it. And on the disbursement side, how much is linked to repo?
On disbursement side, repo would be, in the last quarter, would be quite low. I don't have the exact number there, but it would be quite low. Largely, this, if you look at the repo book, it would have remained stable versus last quarter to this quarter.
Got it. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thanks, Nish.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Keyur Asher from PNB MetLife India Insurance. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity, sir. So I just wanted to get your sense with respect to just trying to better understand how do you manage ALM risk in this business. If you could give some flavor on what would be roughly the tenor of the loans that you extend across these product classes of home loans, LAP, and just against that, how are we placed on the borrowing side? Just because I'm trying to understand from the deck, I see that close to 50-60% of your liabilities are up to 3-year tenor, so just trying to better understand the ALM risk aspect, yeah.
Ashad, if I have to take see the loan tenor, what we offer in various products is different. Like for a home loan, let us say the tenor can be anything from 15 years to 30 years as well. However, I have to call out that the behavioralized maturity of a home loan is less than 7 to 8 years. Because the extension of tenor initially is a one conversation, but there is a behavioralized maturity of the book which is 7 to 8 years, which is largely in line with what is in industry or what we see. And we are largely a prime company, a prime home loan company, so we see the behavioralized maturity at close to 6 to 7 years only rather than even an 8-year scenario. So that 30-year to, and then the second part of the book which comes in terms of whether it's a developer finance, where wherever we look at a behavioralized maturity at less than 24 months today. So there is a various parts of the book. At an average behavioralized maturity of the book is not what is at which tenor you extend. On the behavioralized maturity of the liabilities, there is various mixes we play. I called out in the earlier answer saying that 12 to 15% of our assets, we always do a assignment out as a liability mix because that's the perfect match funding. Then it comes a 10-year bond, which is again a long term, which is which covers more than what you are what we look at in terms of for covering of a liability. Then the bank loans or the NCDs, which are largely between a average maturity of a 3 to 5 years. That is where it is managed, and this is a what we look at our ALM. We don't factor in any kind of a rollover of the liability. That's why what you are looking at a cumulative gap, or there is a 10%, it is well lower than, if I say that from the regulatory definition, permissible, because we don't even factor in rollovers available. For the other loans, there is a rollover, because in the mortgage business, you don't get, if I have to take a 8-year liabilities, all 8-year liabilities are not available, neither in the bond market, and nor it is advisable to fill the entire bucket through a 10-year bond market. So the ALM is to be managed by the company actively, which is in line with all mortgage players, if I have to say so.
Right. Understood. Thanks. This is helpful. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Viral Shah from IIFL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity for getting me again on the line. Just one last question, Atul, was I was noticing your BSE disclosure. So there is some 4,000 crores of portfolio that has been bought this year, unlike in the previous years. So what exactly is this? If you can give some color from where we are acquiring this.
So Viral, this is a portfolio what we purchased. This is an assignment of the portfolio from various players, which I can name the players, where we purchase the various portfolio as a technically opportunity available in terms of from a making a bit of a money. That's a portfolio which is a purchase, pooling purchase, which is assignment in. There is an assignment out what we do, and there is an assignment in what we do. It's a pure opportunistic, a bit of a margin expansion kind strategy available.
Like at what yield does this come in? Any idea? If you can share that.
It is incremental. It is ROE accretive to the business.
Got it. Thank you, Atul.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Shripal Doshi from Aquarius. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity. My question was on the developer finance portfolio. So if you, I was just checking the number of projects that we have. So there is a decline in the incremental projects that we are doing. So is there some reading with respect to decline in the conversion rates with respect to inquiry to purchase ratio in the real estate sector that you see?
So Shripal, no, we are not seeing any decline. While there is a less launches which is happening in last 6 to 9 months, which is by as per various reports available in the market, there is a less launches which is happening. But at our state, we have not seen kind of a decline. That number, absolute number, if you are referring on a quarter on quarter growth in terms of a number of projects,
it can be
on a volume basis, which is on a value basis, we have done better. We have done higher numbers. It can be that there is number of projects can be lower, but it's not structural in nature. I have not seen that number. That's why I'm not able to give you absolute. Just one. Pichle quarter mein kitne project add hue the? Kitne pichle add hue the? Or is quarter mein kitne add hue? That's the question. But it is also that
this quarter is 10. Last year it was 30.
So Shripal, there is also a factor of
60. Last quarter 45. This quarter 60.
But we at absolute number we have added last quarter 45 projects. This quarter 60 is added. So I'm not sure from here the number is coming in terms of a decline.
Number of projects like it is 758, right? This cost 748.
798.
Right. So, but are you seeing any trend there with respect to decline in the the inquiry to conversion rate at the project that we have financed?
No. You are talking inquiry to conversion of the retail sales, or you are talking about
yes, for the developers.
For the developers. So inventory, see, while there is a slowdown in the sales, so that is what if you're referring to the market reports in terms of a slowdown of the sales, but you look at the inventory ratios is the ever lowest in the country today because the launches have declined more than the sales ratio. So there is net no impact in terms of an inventory because as the inventory is still going down only while the sales are slow. So there is sales are slow, but there is no stock also available. Proportionately.
Got it. Got it. Got it. Got it, sir. Yeah, that was the only question I had. Thank you for answering my questions.
Thanks.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Raghav Garg from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Sir, thanks for the follow-up opportunity. Just one question from my side. Needed some clarification to my earlier question. So when you said 35 basis points reduction in funding cost, you meant that over the next 1 year, right? So 35 basis points lower on the exit quarter 100 for 26. Is that understanding correct?
No, I meant YOY cost. So if for the year, what was our cost of fund versus next year's projected cost of fund?
Okay, so
for the year to year. I did not mean exit to exit quarter. I meant for the year.
Okay. Thank you. That's all.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the question and answer session. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Anuj Singla for his closing comments.
Thank you very much. Atul sir, any closing remarks from your end?
No. Thank you very much. Thanks everyone for giving us an opportunity to explain our position.
Thank you. Back to you, Ryan.
Thank you. Thank you. On behalf of Bajaj Housing Finance Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.